this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Meet the Salix Steelers, Why Investor Bill Ackman and Valiant's Michael Pearson are Hot to Buy Raleigh's Homegrown Pharma Company, and What the Loss Means for the Triangle. That headline's on the front page. Then the article starts within the Triangle Business Journal with another headline. Salix deal signals widening gulf between sales and R&D. And this article is written by Jason DeBruin. When Raleigh's Salix Pharmaceuticals folds into Valiant Pharmaceuticals International, it will all but surely bring an end to much of its research and development work. Valiant, based in Canada, simply does not do a lot of research and development and does not have a large product pipeline. That's not its model. Instead, the company, particularly since Michael Pearson took over in 2008, looks for drug companies that already have products on the market or are close to receiving approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Then Valiant goes out and sells hard. Consider this single number, 3%. In both 2013 and 2014, Valiant spent just 3% of its total revenue on R&D. In 2012, it was 2%. By comparison, Salix spent 19% of total revenue on research and development from 2009 through 2013. Even in 2014, when Salix had grown into a more mature drug-selling company, it still pumped $170 million, 15% of total revenue, into R&D. Other major drug companies spend as much as 20% or more on R&D and have pipelines with dozens of products, some in early stages of development. Not Valiant. It has 10 products listed in its pipeline, of which 7 are expected to launch by the end of 2016, meaning they are already in the late stages of development. Impact on Triangle R&D. On February 22, a sunny Sunday in Raleigh, Salix agreed to sell to Valiant for $10 billion in cash. Valiant rival Endo International made a higher bid, though one that included less cash and more stock. On March 16, Valiant upped its bid to $11 billion, and Endo withdrew its offer. Valiant estimates its bid gives Salix an enterprise value of $15.8 billion. David Ridley, the faculty director of Health Sector Management and Duke University's Fuqua School of Business, doesn't mince words. If Valiant acquires Salix and continues its practice of cutting R&D, then Salix employees could be at risk, he says. Salix employs 530 total, including 220 in the Triangle, by the latest Triangle Business Journal count. Company officials did not return a request seeking updated numbers or a breakdown of job functions in Raleigh. Salix regulatory filings do not list a job function breakdown. Any job losses would come on top of two big hits the Triangle area's pharmaceutical industry will already absorb, including 900 jobs lost from GlaxoSmithKline and 250 from Hospira. Ridley points out, though, that job losses of this kind aren't exclusively gloomy. A silver lining to that cloud would be that if those innovative people stay in the Triangle area, they might start new companies, he says. Valiant's strategy of cutting R&D probably makes strategic sense in the near term, but if many manufacturers follow suit and cut R&D, then the few innovators remaining could benefit from a seller's market. Still, it only follows that a geographic area can absorb only so many new companies in the same field, and already the Triangle is flush with pharma startups. John LaMattina, a contributor to Forbes, agrees with Ridley's silver lining. There is no doubt that consolidation is hurting R&D. However, there has been a redistribution of talent and facilities from bigger companies to smaller companies and startups that is, in my view, having a beneficial effect on the drug discovery ecosystem, he wrote on March 12. Of local impact, the acquisition will bring an end to an era in the Triangle. In many ways, Salix metaphorically represents the success that so many Triangle area drug development companies seek to attain. The company traces its roots to California, where it was incorporated in 1989, but moved to Raleigh in 2000. Executives took the company public, but shares traded in the low double digits for years until the turn of the decade when product sales started to skyrocket, particularly of Xifaxan, X-I-F-A-X-A-N, a treatment for the risk for the reduction in risk of overt hepatic encephalopathy that received FDA approval in March 2010. The Salix story evokes comparisons to Genentech, the plucky biotechnology company near San Francisco that developed drugs, including Avastin and Lucentis, and was acquired by Roche in 2009. Meanwhile, investors rejoice. Research scientists will lament a depleted R&D base, but it hasn't seemed to bother Wall Street investors since Valeant has assumed a strategy of growing through acquisitions, a strategy that Pearson brought to the company when he took over as CEO in February 2008, and one that has piqued the interest of Bill Ackman. Consider that when Pearson took over, Valeant shares traded at about $10. On March 16, the day Valeant upped its cash bid for Salix, the stock closed above $202 per share. In 2014, Valeant generated operating profit of more than $2 billion, a margin of 25%. Ackman, the well-known Pershing Square hedge fund manager, has been interested in Valeant for months. He first tried to get Valeant to acquire Allergan in 2014, a company in which he was heavily invested, but he was rebuffed and ultimately, Allergan sold to Actavis. Though Ackman took a public hit in that saga, he said he learned from it, and earlier this year plopped down $3.3 billion for a 5% stake in Valeant. He was quoted as saying that he recognized he was late to the party, but that he thinks the party will go on. Turning a company into cash. From Pearson's and Ackman's perspective, they see Salix not as a company with a promising product pipeline, but a company with marketable assets that can sell right away. More specifically, that boils down to two main pots. The first being Xifaxan, the drug that started Salix years ago and has in some years comprised 70% of total Salix sales. The other pot comes from a library of drugs that came under the Salix banner after it acquired Santarus in January 2014, a move that greatly diversified Salix's portfolio of drugs on the market, albeit but put a strain on operating margins. In 2014, however, sales of Xifaxan actually dipped to $405 million, or 36% of its overall $1.1 billion in sales. Some of that can be explained because Salix had to correct wholesaler inventory levels. In late 2014, Salix disclosed that it had been misreporting wholesaler inventory levels. In short, that means revenue figures were inflated. In the wake of that disclosure, both CEO Carolyn Logan and CFO Adam Derbyshire resigned. To correct the matter quickly, Salix management decided to sell only minimal amounts of its products, including Xifaxan, during the fourth quarter, impacting the reported sales figures. Don't let the reported revenue figures mislead. Xifaxan is still growing strong. Consider that prescription volume increased 22% both from 2012 to 2013 and from 2013 to 2014. That means the decline in reported revenue is due to the inventory problems, not a lack of interest from doctors and patients. The drug will continue to net millions for Valeant going forward. In addition, Salix has an application in front of federal regulators to market Xifaxan as a treatment for irritable bowel syndrome with diarrhea, or IBS-D, something analysts predict will significantly increase revenue. We expect Salix shareholders to support this deal, given the new offer remains all cash, which removes uncertainty related to Xifaxan's approval in IBS-D, says Shabani Malhotra, an analyst with Stern Agee, who covers Salix. Ripe for acquisition. In the coming months, as Valeant folds Salix into the larger parent, Raleigh will feel the residual effects in other parts of the economy. Companies that provide catering services, for example, or office supplies will feel the effects. Even Whole Foods, with its store in the same shopping complex as Salix headquarters off of Six Forks Road, could see reduced business. This is another example of consolidation in the pharmaceuticals industry, which is why it is important for the Triangle to continue diversifying its economy, says NC State University economist Mike Walden. I would expect employee downsizing and possibly fallout on some of the nearby and affiliated companies. An acquisition might not have happened if it weren't for two factors. First, Salix had a harder than anticipated time integrating the Santara sales force into its own. Second, Salix called off an acquisition of its own that would have allowed it to invert and significantly reduce its tax bill. Santaris, like Salix, specializes in gastrointestinal drugs, and the acquisition roughly doubled Salix's sales force to 500. Then CEO Carolyn Logan blamed lower-than-expected drug sales on higher-than-expected turnover in sales representatives. We spent January, February, March getting all of those people trained on our products and getting our people trained on their products, Logan said on a conference call in November. As those vacancies occurred, mostly driven by the Santaris reps, then we had to hire, retrain, and get everybody out there again. Logan suggested that the reps weren't giving their full effort in their final weeks at Salix. When people are planning on leaving a company, they are not always as committed or as focused or working as hard that month or so that they are looking for a job or interviewing that you would hope they are, she said. Salix had agreed to acquire Cosmo Technologies, the Irish subsidiary of Italy-based Cosmo Pharmaceuticals. Through the corporate process, known as inversion, Salix would have established headquarters in Ireland, something Logan said would reduce its taxes from the high 30% range to the low 20% range. American companies had been using this strategy to reduce their tax spend for years until last summer. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew changed tax rules to reduce the tax savings companies would gain through the inversion process. When we announced our agreement to merge with Cosmo Technologies in July, we believed the combination would generate significant value for our stockholders through the addition of key products to our development pipeline and a more efficient corporate structure that would enhance our profitability, said Logan in October. Since then, however, the changed political environment has created more uncertainty regarding the potential benefits we expected to achieve. As a result, Salix and Cosmo have mutually agreed to terminate the proposed transaction. We look forward to a continuation of our long-standing relationship with Cosmo. Had these two events not happened, it's possible, even likely, that Salix would never have been acquired by Valeant. This is how economies change. Even in the best growing areas, there will be setbacks and shifts, Walden says. The Triangle economy will continue to grow. Indeed, it will continue to be a growth leader in the country, so I don't see fatal lasting effects. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The first headline, Dress for Success launches mobile outreach project. Triangle women living in poverty represent more than 21,000 families in this community. In an attempt to help these women thrive in work and in life, Women for Success, the Young Professionals subsection of the nonprofit Dress for Success Triangle, is working to fund the launch of a mobile career center to bring professional attire, a network of support, and career development services to those who lack transportation. Currently, Dress for Success is able to reach only 10% of Triangle women living in poverty, the majority of whom are single mothers in their mid-30s with two children. The Mobile Career Center will expand the agency's reach by approximately 20% more women annually, including those in domestic violence and women's shelters, a population difficult to reach. Co-founded by Ashley Ascott and Lindsay Singler, in March 2013, Women for Success has raised nearly $50,000 to support programs for the women Dress for Success Triangle serves. All proceeds raised by Women for Success directly benefit Dress for Success Triangle. Dress for Success Triangle has helped more than 7,000 women get back on the employment fast track since 2008. Of these women, more than 55% gained employment in 2014. Steve Case is rolling into town. AOL co-founder Steve Case is hopping on a bus and heading for Raleigh and Durham. Case, along with his D.C.-based venture capital firm, Revolution Ventures, is embarking on what he's calling the Rise of the Rest bus tour, which will travel through southern states this May, doling out $500,000 to local startups. The cash will come from Case's personal coffer. We're excited to visit the Raleigh-Durham area. This is a vibrant and diverse startup hub that is quickly becoming a national beacon for innovation and new job creation, says Case. There is so much great startup activity taking place in this region, and our Rise of the Rest visit will help tell that story. The tour will also hit Richmond, Virginia, Charleston, South Carolina, Atlanta, and New Orleans. He's done similar tours in other parts of the country. The current tour heads to Raleigh and Durham May 5, when Case plans to hold a public event with local entrepreneurs, investors, elected officials, and civic leaders to discuss the startup ecosystem, as well as run a pitch competition to decide which companies will receive a $100,000 infusion, part of that $500,000 total. The day will begin with a breakfast and moves into a startup crawl, where Case will get to see local entrepreneurs in action. 65-year-old Raleigh shoe store expands with new shop for hard-to-fit feet. Family-owned Mobley's Shoes in North Raleigh has launched a new venture, a store geared to customers needing wide-width footwear. The Wide Shoe Company is now open at 7334 Creedmoor Road, not far from the current Mobley shop at 7422 Creedmoor Road in Stonehenge Market. The new store carries brands such as Clarks, Nike, New Balance, Merrell, and Sperry in hard-to-find sizes. We were getting a lot of requests for wide widths for men and women and did not have the capacity to do it in our current location, says Clifton Mobley. Clifton's grandparents, Sam and Rachel Mobley, opened the original Mobley shoes in 1950 in downtown Raleigh. He and his father and brother now run the business. What's the best triangle city for basketball fans? Two reports say Chapel Hill. As the NCAA tournament begins, Chapel Hill finds itself in two national ranking stories in the past week. Financial website Wallet Hub ranks it the number 2 city in the nation for basketball fans, and National Geographic calls it one of the 4 best slam dunk college towns. Wallet Hub's rankings of 300 cities are based on multiple fan-friendly characteristics, including NBA and NCAA Division I team presence, team performance, average ticket price, championships won, sports bars per capita, and social media engagement. Its top 5 cities are Storrs, Connecticut, Chapel Hill, San Antonio, Texas, Memphis, Tennessee, and Orlando, Florida. In the triangle, Durham ranks number 36 and Raleigh is number 158. Elsewhere in North Carolina, Davidson is number 30, Charlotte number 31, Cullowhee number 56, Boiling Springs 91, Boone 131, Buies Creek 155, Greenville number 197, and Greensboro number 208, Asheville 240, Winston-Salem 242, Wilmington 244, and High Point 283. Trailways taps Durham nonprofit leader as CEO. Virginia bus company Trailways Transportation System named Sheila D. Ryba, a former nonprofit leader from the Triangle, as the company's next president and CEO. Ryba had previously served 4 years as chief professional officer of the John Avery Boys and Girls Club in Durham before resigning from her post in 2013 to start her own consulting firm, Lion's Share Consulting. Prior to her hiring at the Boys and Girls Club, Ryba had also worked as the CEO of the Alice Aycock Poe Center for Health Education in Raleigh. Trailways Chairman Ron Moore introduced Ryba as the company's new CEO at its annual stockholders meeting and conference in Palm Springs on March 8. Ryba succeeds outgoing CEO Gail C. Ellsworth, who announced her retirement in early March after nearly 18 years at the corporation's helm. Trailways, based in Fairfax, Virginia, comprises 75 independently owned and operated motor coach companies throughout North America and Europe. And finally, we have a section called The Hype. Triangle communities make recent national rankings. Number one, Durham's the best city in the U.S. for working women. That's from Nerd Wallet. And number one, Raleigh's the best hotspot for tech startups. And that's from selfstorage.com. Now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. First, we have On Real Estate by Amanda Hoyle. New 21C Museum Hotel in Durham opens with art gallery, restaurant. The much-anticipated 21C Museum Hotel officially opened in downtown Durham with a ribbon-cutting ceremony the morning of March 16. The $48 million, 125-room hotel, located in the historic Hill Building, that for much of its history housed offices for local bank operations for CCB and SunTrust banks. The hotel features its own high-end restaurant, counting house, and art exhibition space on the second floor that's open to the general public. Jerry Link is the general manager of the hotel. On the outside, the new 21C Museum Hotel building is much the same as it was when its Art Deco designers opened the 15-story building in 1937 on Corcoran Street in downtown Durham. But on the inside, 21C Museum Hotel's CEO and founder, Steve Wilson, confesses that he is seeking to entertain, inspire, and provoke any visitor who sets foot into the building. I heard that a local resident got to have an early tour of the building, and her comment was, "I think the belt just fell off the Bible belt, and that's exactly what we wanted to do," Wilson said to the crowd gathered for the official opening of the hotel. "Everywhere we've been, we've caused quite a stir," he says. The 10,500-square-foot gallery exhibition on the hotel's second floor will change its feature pieces about twice per year. It is the chain's second-largest art exhibition room behind its property in Bentonville, Arkansas. Durham's opening exhibition, Pop Stars, includes more than 100 pieces of contemporary art ranging from a video of a new Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis to an etched glass piece featuring Paris Hilton. Rates for its contemporary styled rooms range from $239 per night for a standard king or double queen room to more than $1,300 per night for its penthouse 21C suite with a private terrace on the 15th floor. But the interior architects from New York, design firm Deborah Burke Partners, who worked on the project, did try to save most of the building's original terrazzo floors and the windows within the hotel. 21C Museum Hotels is an independent luxury hotel chain based in Louisville, Kentucky. It also has a location in Cincinnati, Ohio. Raleigh Developer unveils plans for 5 new retail buildings in Raleigh, Durham, and Mebane. PH Developers, a retail development firm led locally by Raleigh real estate executive Rob Hicks, will soon be underway with 5 new retail building projects in the Triangle region. In Durham, PH Developers is tearing down the Ole NC Barbecue at 4201 North Roxboro Road. In its place, the developers are building a small upscale retail center that has already leased 2 of the 3 spaces for a Starbucks coffee shop and a Jimmy John's sandwich shop. On US 15501 near South Square, at the site of the former Bavarian Brathaus restaurant in Durham, Hicks is building a similarly sized retail building already fully leased to Starbucks, AT&T, and Mattress Firm. In Raleigh, on Capitol Boulevard, the group will be starting construction soon in a 20,000-square-foot building at the site of the former Summit Auto dealership. The building will be occupied by a McAllister's Deli, Five Guys Burgers and Fries, The Vitamin Shop, iMart, Mattress Firm, and Mattress Pro. The group also purchased the former Crazy Fire restaurant building near Triangle Town Center Mall and will be building a new building leased to Mattress Pro. In Mebane, PH Developers has received town approval to build a retail building off Interstate 85 and Mebane Oaks Road with a Starbucks, AT&T, and Sleepy's mattress store. Knott retires from Raleigh's Peter Millar. The founder of the Peter Millar apparel line, Chris Knott, has retired from the company. Nod, a 48-year-old native of Fuquay Varina, founded the Raleigh-based company in 2001 and helped grow it into a sought-after line of men's and women's sportswear, now sold in specialty stores and department stores across the country, including select Neiman Marcus and Nordstrom stores worldwide. I've spent the better part of 30 years in the industry pursuing the perfect swatch, but now is the right time for me to step back from this brand and start living the lifestyle it was founded upon, not stated in a prepared release. I will always live the Peter Millar lifestyle and will continue myself a lifetime ambassador for this remarkable brand. And finally, in a section called Now Hiring, Trinity Partners preps for Duke Realty acquisitions. The Raleigh office for the Trinity Partners commercial real estate firm has hired 16 new employees to prep for the previously announced acquisition of Duke Realty's portfolio of 24 office buildings in the Triangle. Trinity Partners' sister company, Charlotte-based Trinity Capital Advisors, is one of three joint venture partners purchasing the Duke Realty buildings in a deal scheduled to close on April 1. Trinity has hired Raleigh real estate veteran William Allen, formerly a partner at the Avison Young brokerage firm, as its director of office leasing. Trinity has also hired Duke Realty's former property management staff leaders, Amy Mayer and Mike Landreth, who are already familiar with the 24-building portfolio. Mayer will join Trinity as senior portfolio manager. Landreth will be senior operations manager. And now we turn to the On Technology page, written by Lauren Onisorge. The first headline, Duke lets lure alums to invest in startups. When entrepreneur Damian Hoffman left Duke University in 1999, it was a rude awakening. The dot-com bubble was bursting. So I went through that rodeo, he says. Today, he's the founder of The Cheat Sheet, a media company with more than 15 million monthly users, and he's ready to pay that success forward. Duke University recently announced a vehicle that could help him do just that, the Duke Angel Network, a Blue Devil alumni network, and a new innovation fund aimed at turning Duke research into startups and jobs. The new philanthropic Duke Innovation Fund kicked off with a $2 million investment from Duke. It will invest alongside the Angel Network to expand the funds available to companies. Hoffman says it's about time, pointing to similar programs at other schools, particularly the one at Stanford University. Duke has the same quality of talent. Duke has a great engineering school. Duke boasts an impressive alumni catalog with names like Cisco CEO John Chambers, Apple CEO Tim Cook, former Morgan Stanley CEO John Mack, and Etsy CEO Chad Dickerson, but it does lack two things that Stanford gets from its proximity to Silicon Valley: money and advisory experience. A lot of Duke students have a lot of good ideas, Hoffman says, but without the resume lines that they interned at a Pinterest or a Airbnb, it's a lot harder for a financier to throw money at. That's starting to change as Triangle entrepreneurship gains steam. Recent exits, such as those of Appia, Digital Smiths, and Automated Insights, are bringing new investor attention to the Triangle. The Duke Angel Network could be forming just in time to take advantage of the upswing. The initiative isn't just about investment capital, it's also about mentoring, says Eric Toon, Vice Provost and Director of Duke's campus-wide Innovation and Entrepreneurship Initiative, which will oversee the network. He says it will catalyze Duke's vibrant entrepreneurial community and support innovation throughout our global family. Duke will soon begin to seek angel investors, drawing on the participation and expertise of Duke alumni, more than 700 of whom are currently registered on entrepreneurial investment website AngelList. Toon predicts the network will attract 150 angel investors within the first 3 years. We've heard from people across this community that one of the biggest barriers is a lack of investment capital, says Richard Broadhead, Duke University president. This new network is addressing that challenge directly by drawing on one of Duke's greatest resources, namely its alumni and other supporters. Rich alumni investing in entrepreneurs at their alma maters seems to be in vogue right now. Longtime Triangle Pharma executive Fred Eshelman donated $100 million to the UNC Chapel Hill Eshelman School of Pharmacy, which bears his name from previous donations, to create an institute for innovation. Drug-detecting nail polish startup snags funding. Nearly $1 million in and undercover colors may not have a product, but the Raleigh company is creating international buzz. Date rape drug-detecting nail polish startup Undercover Color has raised even more cash and appears to have a Burt's Bees veteran working behind the scenes. Undercover Colors calls itself the first fashion company empowering women to prevent sexual assault. And though its story has gone viral, having appeared everywhere from the Daily Mail to the Huffington Post, after the Triangle Business Journal published its first report, the founders have stayed stealthy, keeping the specifics of their innovation close to the vest for now. According to co-founder Tyler Confrey Maloney, the company has closed on $650,000 of its $1.2 million round, a total cash haul of about $950,000 in equity funding. The company, which counts local angel David Gardner among its backers, is developing a nail polish that would change color when it encountered a date rape drug. But the product is still in research mode, meaning that despite all the hype, it's not yet on store shelves. How exactly it would work and what specific drugs would be targeted with the science are specifics Undercover Colors hasn't yet released. Four investors participated in the latest raise, which, along with names of founding entrepreneurs Stephen Gray and Confrey Maloney, lists cosmetics veteran Celeste Lutrario as a director. Lutrario currently serves as Vice President of Research and Development for Clorox-owned natural cosmetics subsidiary Burt's Bees, which is based in Durham. She's also, according to her LinkedIn profile, held roles at Chanel, Elizabeth Arden, and Avon Products. And in a section called They Said It, first we have a quote from Todd Olson, the CEO of Raleigh-based Pendo, speaking after his company closed on $1.25 million in a debt round. It's never easy to raise cash in North Carolina. And also a quote from Judd Bowman, founder of Appia, speaking after Digital Turbine closed on the acquisition of his company. Broadly speaking, there is no redundancy. We're filling a hole for them that they weren't filling themselves. And finally, in a section called Media Tech, former TV anchor joins Holderness Family Venture. Raleigh's Holderness Family, yes, the ones of Christmas Jammies fame, has a new professional ally, former WNCN anchor Melanie Sanders. Sanders has joined Green Room Communications, the media company founded by Inside Edition veteran Kim Dean Holderness and Sharon Delaney McLeod. The firm specializes in viral marketing, creating campaigns for entities such as Rex Hospital and Duke University School of Nursing. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Pharmaceuticals page written by Jason DeBrun. Clinical trials often miss reporting deadlines. Duke study finds majority fail to file results on time. Drug companies and researchers do not promptly report the results of trials that test new and experimental drugs in humans, according to findings from a Duke University report. Perhaps surprisingly, when tax dollars go to fund these tests, the results are even less likely to be promptly reported than when industry funds the clinical trial. This study is particularly important for the Triangle, as some of the world's largest clinical research organizations, such as Quintiles, Inc. Research Holdings, Parexel, and PRA Health Sciences, are all based here or have major operations here, collectively employing thousands of scientists, sales, support, and administrative staff. Of more than 13,000 clinical trials listed at the Federal Registry, clinicaltrials.gov, only 13.4% of the eligible trials reported findings within the required one-year window, according to the Duke research, which was published March 12 in the New England Journal of Medicine. For industry-sponsored trials, the rate was 17%. It was 5.7% for trials funded by academic or government sources other than the National Institutes of Health, and 8.1% for NIH-funded trials. Study authors said the lack of transparency by industry, federal funders, and academia has created a critical information gap about investigational drugs, devices, and biologic therapies that not only hampers progress but also violates obligations to patients. Patients who participate in clinical research have the expectation that the risk of participation will be offset by the creation of generalizable knowledge and the advancement of science, and that is achieved through the availability of clinical trial results, says report lead author Dr. Monique Anderson, cardiologist and researcher at Duke Clinical Research Institute. Sponsors who lead clinical trials have an ethical and legal obligation to publicly report their findings, whether the results are positive or negative. Compliance improved over time. At 5 years, 41.5% of industry-funded trials, 27.7% of academic non-NIH-funded trials, and 38.9% of NIH-funded trials had reported results. The public, as well as healthcare providers, want open science, says Dr. Eric Peterson, executive director of Duke Clinical Research Institute and co-author of the paper. This study demonstrates that despite national laws, industry, and especially NIH-sponsored trials have a long way to go. Among the studies in the analysis, nearly 85% were designed to investigate a new treatment, about 8% tested a prevention therapy, and the rest were for diagnostic tools. Two-thirds of the trials were funded by industry, followed by academic non-NIH sources and the NIH. It's boom time for endowments. A hot stock market increased the value of university endowments by billions last year. North Carolina universities have benefited mightily from a strong year on Wall Street. In North Carolina alone, university endowments increased in value by close to $1.8 billion, or 14.5%, from 2013 to 2014, according to an analysis of endowment data published in the 2014 NACUBO Common Fund Study of Endowments. Of course, more than half, or about $1 billion, went to Duke University alone, which has by far the largest endowment in the state and the 15th largest in the nation. For comparison, Harvard University has the largest endowment in the nation with a value of $36 billion, more than $10 billion higher than any other university. The combined worth of all endowments in North Carolina is $14 billion. North Carolina's uninsured population decreasing at slower rate. And that's the first headline on the On Healthcare page, also written by Jason DeBruin. States that did not expand Medicaid after the Affordable Care Act, including North Carolina, saw their uninsured population decrease at a slower clip than those that expanded Medicaid. That might not come as a surprise, but on March 16, the Obama administration put numbers to what many had already assumed. Among low-income, uninsured populations in states that expanded Medicaid, the uninsured rate dropped by 13% since the ACA became law 5 years ago. In the other states, including North Carolina, the rate decreased by 7%. The law initially included a provision requiring states to increase Medicaid eligibility to anyone up to 138% of the federal poverty level. Medicaid is the government program that provides health insurance to the poorest citizens, mostly women, children, and the disabled. The Supreme Court overturned that portion of the law, and 37 states, mainly those with Republican state leadership, did not expand the program. In North Carolina, Medicaid comes with a $13 billion annual bill, of which the federal government pays about two-thirds. Because many people without insurance don't see a primary care physician regularly, they tend to develop health care problems that then require a hospital trip, a very expensive kind of care. Also, these patients tend to go to an emergency department for minor injuries because laws prevent hospitals from turning them away, and they don't have a relationship with a doctor or many accessible touch points with the healthcare system. While expanding Medicaid could mean higher taxes, the Obama administration argued that the ACA as a whole, including an expanded Medicaid program, would lower health care costs enough that individual taxpayers would save more in health care costs than the increase they would pay in taxes. 5 years in, it's difficult to get an exact scorecard, partly because so many factors impact the nation's $3 trillion health care bill, and partly because macroeconomic theories are just inherently difficult to score. Since the ACA, 16.4 million uninsured people have gained health coverage nationwide. And in the section called Big Number, that number is $150 million. That's the amount Rex Healthcare plans to sell in bonds to finance the construction of the new Heart Tower on its campus in Northwest Raleigh. Those who drive on Blue Ridge Road will have noticed the crane and construction project at the Rex campus, which has a total estimated cost of $220 million. While it won't add any hospital beds, the Heart Tower will bring all of Rex's cardiac care to one place. Rex, a subsidiary of UNC Healthcare, performs thousands of cardiovascular procedures, but provides those services in seven different areas on its campus. In some cases, patients must be wheeled nearly a half mile across the campus to move through the process of care. Ratings agencies downgraded their outlook on Rex's bonds, though that's common when organizations take on more debt. The hospital still has strong ratings, including a AA from Fitch and an A2 from Moody's, both near the top of their respective scales. We're not surprised that rating agencies reduce their outlooks, given the additional debt Rex is taking on, says Alan Wolf, a Rex spokesman. We are confident that the investments Rex is making will pay off and that our hospital system's future is very strong. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we come to the A Better World page written by Todd Cohen, who also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. We'll start with his column. The headline on the column, Center Serves Victims of Violence. Every year, more than 157,000 adult North Carolinians are victims of domestic violence, costing the state nearly $307.9 million, or $32.26 per resident, excluding the cost of emergency shelters, according to a study last year at UNC Charlotte. Helping to address the needs of women and children in Durham County who are victims of domestic violence or sexual assault is the Durham Crisis Response Center, which focuses on advocacy, education, prevention, and support. The center, created in February 2001 through the merger of Rape Crisis of Durham and the Orange Durham Coalition for Battered Women, has served more than 20,000 women and children, including 237 women and children who stayed at its 18-bed shelter and another 3,800 who called its crisis line. There's no wrong door where a victim can come to us, says Aurelia Sands Bell, the center's executive director. Since she joined the center in July 2006, its annual operating budget has doubled to just above $1 million. It has trained its staff of 8 full-time and 12 part-time employees, and its volunteers to handle clients with a range of needs, languages, and cultural backgrounds, and it has expanded its services and its collaboration with partner agencies. In addition to its shelter and 24-hour confidential crisis line, services include accompanying clients to the hospital and court, legal clinics with local lawyers, support groups, counseling, and referrals for job training, housing, and child care. The center has added Spanish-speaking staff to field calls on its crisis line, expanded its counseling for individuals and groups, added legal advocates and a sexual assault investigator, and is working more collaboratively with law enforcement and criminal justice officials, schools, and the Durham County Departments of Public Health and Social Services. It also partners with schools, faith-based communities, and youth organizations with a 6 to 8 week pilot program to help 80 students in middle and high school see the link between alcohol and sexual violence. The center is in the planning phase of an effort to expand its shelter. Sexual violence is far more widespread than people want to think or believe and is tied to other community problems, Sands Bell says. Many women are homeless, for example, as a result of domestic or sexual violence, she says. More victims are seeking assistance from the center and other agencies because of increased awareness about the problem of domestic and sexual violence and a greater sense of being believed and knowing they can get help, she says. It is also important to have honest conversations with our young people about sexual assault and violence and really address the impact of violence on the lives of children, Sands Bell says. We have to look at domestic violence and sexual assault as a community issue, a societal issue, she says, not simply as a woman's issue. And in the nonprofit news section, lawyers take calls, offer free assistance. Attorneys from Cranville, Sumner, and Hartzog LLP participated in the 8th annual For All Statewide Service Day on March 6, a program of the North Carolina Bar Association Foundation and the North Carolina Bar Association. Attorneys took calls from the public at 8 call centers throughout North Carolina and provided legal information and referral resources to callers. Local RE/MAX agents support hospital. In 2014, 26 area RE/MAX agents became Miracle Agents. Local agents donate a portion of each real estate transaction to Duke Children's Hospital and Health Center, the area's local Children's Miracle Network Hospital. Local agents and offices have contributed a cumulative total of $68,521 to Duke Children's Hospital through the program. Needed Triangle blood donors. Local hospitals and the American Red Cross are seeking donations of blood. March storms forced the cancellation of more than 200 American Red Cross blood drives, resulting in nearly 7,000 uncollected blood and platelet donations. This shortfall follows more than 26,400 uncollected blood and platelet donations in February due to severe weather across 27 states. And now we turn to the executive voice in the Triangle Business Journal, where the focus is on Eric Fortune, the CEO of Clearwater Aquariums and the Fish Room, that has annual revenue of $1.8 million, 24 employees, and his first job was as a pet store clerk at age 14. The headline on his article, How I Turned a Hobby into a Fish Empire. Despite big box competition, Eric Fortune is growing a profitable business. And this is written by Lauren K. Onasorge. They call Eric Fortune the Fish Man. It's an appropriate title for the man who brought the fish room to Raleigh. It all started in 1984. Fortune was 14, an employee at what was then a pet shop at Falls Village Shopping Center. With a flash of gills, he was introduced to what would become his life's obsession, fish. Now, you have iPhones, iPads, and everything else, he says. You didn't really have much back in 84. At 14, Fortune had a different kind of screen, a 10-gallon freshwater tank. As he watched his tropical fish dart through the water, something happened. It was a spark, instantaneous and life-changing, and if you ask Fortune, he'll tell you he can't explain it. I just liked fish, he says, laughing. Some people who like fish add to the tank, adding a snail or a goldfish, but Fortune kept adding more tanks. At the peak of his hobby, he had 4, with fish and carefully curated sea scenes lining the shelf that might house a flat screen today. Now he owns a tank-filled store off Capitol Boulevard. As a business owner now, I don't have a tank at home, he says. A walk across his store is like a trek through an aquarium. To the right, saltwater fish, such as Nemo-esque clownfish, stare curiously through the glass. To the left, spotted pufferfish swizzle their eyes at the shoppers. For Fortune, who spent most of his young adult life working at pet shops, including a now-closed store his parents opened in Atlantic Beach in the 1980s, it's a livelihood. In the late 80s, early 90s, he discovered he could make money doing custom installations, such as a 500-gallon tank at T-Bone Steakhouse in Myrtle Beach. He taught himself plumbing and electrical skills and watched his father install tanks, slowly creating a business while working at pet stores, such as Raleigh's now-closed Fish World. In 2004, the side installation business became a full-time career, Clearwater Aquariums. In 2008, he used that revenue stream to start the Raleigh store. The Cary store came in 2011 and was licensed as a franchise to one of his employers in 2013. The Wilmington franchise launched last year. He plans to open two new corporate stores in the coming months, one in Fayetteville and one in Durham. The stores, which cater to people looking for purified water for their tanks, fish for their aquariums, and even corals for their collections, even connect to an app. You test your water and keep track of it through the app so store personnel know the specific needs of your aquarium. The maintenance and installation company, which contracts with more than 200 fish owners, including Cowfish Sushi Burger Bar, which owns a 3,000-gallon tank in North Hills, to clean and maintain their tanks, is the bulk of the business. It's more than just wrapping glass boxes in cabinetry. Take a Durham home whose 500-gallon tank required special plumbing and electrical work to reach a mechanical room 120 feet away, a job that paid about $60,000, or an installation at the Hills of Rosemont in Durham where swimmers in the pool can tread alongside the glass. We've got folks that have a couple of $100,000 in their fish tanks, Fortune says. But he fears for the future of the hobby, as even his own children seem preoccupied with technology over tanks. In today's generations, there are so many other things to occupy them, he says. He fears more from that generational shift than he does from the rise of big box stores, which he says are successful due to their dog and cat focus. With the rise of tech talent, more people are discovering the hobby in their early 30s. They have money for the first time, he points out, but he worries about what he calls the hobbyist window, ages 9 to 15. That's why his team visits schools trying to get kids interested in biology, and it's why he sponsors a soccer field trying to reach kids where they are, on the ball field. But even the sign over the field with the fish room name doesn't always grab the right kind of attention. Some folks think the fish room is a restaurant, he says, but we're not. We're an aquarium store. And now we'll turn to the People on the Move section in the Triangle Business Journal. And the spotlight is on Regina Petaway, Director of Wake County Human Services. After serving in Wake County government for more than 20 years, Regina Petaway, P-E-T-T-E-W-A-Y, has been named Director of Wake County Human Services. She has served the county in multiple roles, including Assistant Health Director and Director of the Wake County Division of Administration. She has been Interim Director of Wake County Human Services since August 2014. Wake County Human Services is a consolidated county department of social services, public health, housing, and transportation services. The department serves more than 120,000 people annually in multiple locations throughout Wake County. Its services range from public health immunizations for children and adults who participate traveling abroad to services such as child welfare, Medicaid, and affordable housing. Petaway directly manages 12 people and has a senior management team of 22. The department, as a whole, employs roughly 1,500 people. What is one thing you wish people knew about your job? Two things. One is that Wake County Human Services potentially serves each and every person in the county in some way, especially if there is a disease outbreak or a natural or man-made disaster. Secondly, anyone in a role similar to mine has to have a passion for the work at a systems and leadership level, and a passion for helping people to help themselves. This is a 24/7 job that never ends. What are some of your major goals in this position? Number one, to continue to provide excellent customer and client services to the community based on our mandates and best practices. Number two, to lead our agency in a plan to retain and support world-class employees. And number three, to address some of the challenges we are facing associated with benefits distribution and access to preventative health care for indigent and the working poor. Biggest worry? That as Wake County continues to grow in number, people forget that out of the 1 million people who live here, there are thousands who are still struggling to find jobs at wages that support their families, struggling to find affordable and accessible health services, struggling to find mental health care, and struggling to find affordable homes. Personal, husband Arthur, and one daughter. And in the time we have left, we'll read from the Viewpoint page, the guest column, written by Joe Brancatelli, who writes the weekly business travel column, Seat 2B, for the Business Journal's, a sister organization of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, U.S. Airlines wage their own Gulf War with the big three Gulf carriers. After 2 years of planning and planned leaks, the big three U.S. airlines, American, United, and Delta, have gone public in their turf war against the big three Gulf carriers, Emirates, Etihad, and Qatar Airways. But first, an intermezzo. Need a little Rome in your life? A round trip nonstop from New York at the end of the month will cost you about $1,075. Yet a round trip flight to Milan from New York will cost only about $635. Why is there a 40% fare differential between flights to Rome, Italy's government and tourism capital, and nonstops to Milan, Italy's fashion and finance capital? The answer, competition. On the New York-Rome run, only the big three U.S. carriers and Alitalia offer flights, but the Milan route also has an aggressive upstart determined to upset the long-established order. Emirates launched nonstops between New York's Kennedy Airport and Milan's Malpensa Airport 18 months ago, and coach fares have plummeted. Now do you understand why U.S. carriers have declared war on the Gulf Airlines? The so-called Gulfies are proving to be tough, well-funded, bare-knuckles competitors, and after merging their way to control of the U.S. market, the financially fat and complacent U.S. carriers weren't expecting a Spanish Inquisition of competition from a distant corner of the world. And I'm afraid we're going to have to stop right there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.